to Week in Review, where we recap events and issues pertinent to Central Illinois. I'm WMBD Radio News Director Will Stevenson. The impact of a business and entertainment developer's business all but completely going belly up continues to be felt in the Peoria area. The old pump house on Kingman Avenue in Peoria Heights could soon have a new entity occupying it. That's after village trustees in Peoria Heights recently voted to reject a proposal from the KDB group on an updated lease agreement. KDB had been leasing it and even subleased the property to a popcorn shop that closed last year. Mayor Michael Phelan says there were some concerns with the proposal. He says KDB had not been keeping up with paying property taxes at the pump house, and a deal for a new tenant to sublease the property had fallen apart shortly before a recent Board of Trustees meeting. Phelan says there were also concerns with KDB's history, given how the group backed out of a number of local projects nearly a year ago. Phelan talked with WMBD's TJ Carson.
It was shortly after Kim Lickenstaff arrived in the area. He happened to see the pump house, which is a beautiful older building that the village owns near Tower Park on Kingman Avenue, and he fell in love with it. The village had not really been using it. Originally, it was built to pump water within the water system of the village of Peoria Heights, and we were no longer using it. We had an office in there, but he fell in love with the architecture and the building and the footprint itself of the property. And he wanted to purchase the property or lease it. The village entered into a lease agreement with him, and he made several public presentations to the public in Village Hall at public meetings and explained what his vision was for that property, which included a lot of things. So they came in and they did leasehold improvements on the building itself. Not everything that was envisioned has been finished or was finished, but they finished the pump house building itself and brought in a popcorn shop. That was not their first concept. The first was some sort of a small restaurant, and we didn't think that was a right fit for the neighborhood. We wanted something that would complement the neighborhood and be low impact. So a popcorn shop was agreed upon, and then the popcorn shop went out of business. Somewhere along the line, KDB appealed to the village to lower the rent. And my recollection is the original rent was $2,000. I think it could have been $2,500, but I believe it was $2,000. And they appealed to the village, and we lowered the rent. So we lowered the rent to $200 a month. And within the lease, they had permission to sublease to a tenant. So since the popcorn shop left, there really hasn't been any viable business in the building. KDB had been searching for a suitable tenant and unable to find one. So we thought they had a suitable tenant. Last Tuesday night's board meeting had that on the agenda to approve a new lease, although I'm not sure that would have passed, but anyway, it was on the agenda for approval. And shortly before the meeting, an hour or so before the meeting, their attorney called our attorney and said that that had fallen through, and they did not have a tenant.
So there was a lot of action before the meeting, it sounds like.
Well, over months and months, you know, we'd spent an awful lot of time and effort with our staff trying to work with them on a new lease. If you remember, earlier in the summer, I believe it was, it came to our attention that they, under the lease, they were to pay, generate sales tax, and they were to pay the property tax. But that was one of the good things that the village was excited about, because public properties are exempt from property tax. So once we leased it to them, that generated a property tax bill. So they were paying property taxes to the village and the school and et cetera, all the taxing bodies, and generating some sales tax. And there was a higher use of the building. And, kids in the neighborhood could get a bag of popcorn and a snack, et cetera. So originally we were all excited about that. But once the popcorn shop left, it wasn't generating any sales tax. Now, they were obligated to pay property taxes, and we found out early in the summer, I think it was late spring, that they hadn't paid the property tax on the property. So our attorney sent them a letter that they were in default. Both sides just, you know, there was a difference of opinion. KDB obviously didn't think they were in default, but that led to new discussions about a future lease. So we had been talking with them, putting a lot of time and effort in all summer long about a new lease. And then, again, they notified us Tuesday that the tenant they had in mind fell through.
Are you able to tell who that tenant was going to be or what would have occupied that space?
Well, I can't because they didn't want me involved in the discussion, so, or our attorney, Mark Walton, which is kind of funny. But I had heard that it was some sort of a cake or a pie shop. Okay. But KDB could tell you that.
Yeah, I want to go back to the building itself for a moment. It's been described as a historic building. What makes that building historic in your mind?
It was built by the WPA during the Depression, so not only the construction and the architecture are just unique and amazing.
Okay. The one thing I wanted to ask about the proposal with KDB, we had, earlier this year they had pulled out of a lot of proposals and a lot of developments. Did their past history with that factor into the decisions?
Well, that would it was a unanimous vote, but I'm certain in talking with some of the trustees, yeah, that obviously factored in. But, you know, that's six people voted on this, and there might be six differences of opinion, but I think that certainly entered into the minds of each trustee when they voted.
What is the future hold for that property at the moment? What are their plans to find new tenants, new owners? What's the plans going to be?
Well, incidentally, once the public found out about that vote, we've already heard from several different parties that are interested in the building. So what the village wants is, again, the highest and best use of the property that has complements the neighborhood and doesn't have any negative impact on the neighborhood, something that also would complement and function with Tower Park. And we just built an accessible playground, almost $200,000 we put into one of the area's only accessible playgrounds. So we want something that would work with and function and support all of that. So what we're planning on doing is we'll do a formal request for proposals, and even KDB, we would encourage KDB to even submit something. So some ideas and proposals for the building and the property. I would expect that wouldn't take long. Probably January or February, we'll have something out and ask people to submit those proposals, and if the board likes any of those, they would select that and formally vote on that and probably enter into discussions on a lease.
Is there a preference for a type of business or organization you would like to see occupy that space?
I don't want to say anything that would discourage or prohibit anyone from not submitting something. So if someone has an idea that they think would be right, we'd like to hear it.
Okay. So this sounds like it's kind of just a small hiccup in the process to get that space occupied.
I don't think there will be a problem getting the space occupied, but a small hiccup with all of the history. I mean, this has gone on for a couple of years. And as I said, since the popcorn shop went out of business, you know, the popcorn shop was a great fit, I thought. So just a lot of time and effort on this and to have it in this way is really disappointing. But again, I'm optimistic that we will find something that is suitable.
Any other thoughts? Anything else?
No. I think you covered it. I would just say again, you know, when you asked me early on about some of the history, that's, you know, just from a recollection of sitting here, I can't, you know, like the number of the original lease and the terms and the length when Kim Blickenstaff first came to town. That would just, I'm recalling that from recollection.
Peoria Heights Mayor Michael Phelan talking with WMBD's TJ Carson. More Week in Review coming up. A sacred piece of history to the region is on display now at the Peoria Riverfront Museum. A small exhibit in the museum's lobby features a vestment stole worn by Father Jacques Marquette during his expedition to the Peoria area. It dates back to 1673 as part of missionary and exploration trips along the Illinois River. The display marks the 350th anniversary of the Marquette and Joliet expedition. Bishop Louis Tilka of the Peoria Diocese says the stole is a link back to some of Peoria's early founders. WMBD's TJ Carson talked with Bishop Tilka and the museum's chief curator, Bill Conger.
The significance, obviously, is the stole is worn by a priest as a sign of his office and an outward sign of his ministry of trying to spread the gospel. So people would be identified, Father Marquette would have been identified, especially in those sacred moments of celebrating the sacraments, like he baptized the baby when he was in the region that was dying, celebrated Mass. Those are the times that people would identify him because he was wearing the stole.
And it is believed that this is the actual vestment that he wore during
Absolutely.
All that.
Certainly he, you know, doing a travel of thousands of miles back in 1673, I'm sure he wasn't carrying a whole suitcase of liturgical vestments. He probably only had one or two stoles that he was wearing, and this is one of them.
For it being 350 years old, it's still in pretty good shape.
It is in pretty good shape. It obviously needs a lot of care, and it doesn't get used because of the number one, the significance and wanting to preserve it for history, but it does need a lot of TLC to make sure that we don't lose it.
Now, I understand this is one of the first times that this has been seen by public eyes outside of the Diocese Museum. Is that correct?
Correct. So the Diocese has had it on view in our Diocesan Museum, which is also the Fulton Sheen Museum. We've had that on display a few times, and then honestly the last time it was seen was when I wore it to preach to the priests just before my ordination in 2020.
What does it mean to have this vestment come to the public eyes here at the museum to give everybody a chance to take a glance at it and learn more about it?
I think it is important for it to be shared in the public museum so that people understand the history of how our area developed, how it grew, how the faith was brought to this area, but also how the indigenous people, the Native Americans, were in the area and how they encountered the Western cultures, the Western faith of the Christianity, how that helped them to kind of come to grow in this area and this whole region continue to develop.
And if I understand correctly, that history kind of has tells how this area was formed as well.
Absolutely. You know, so we get an understanding of how many of our ancestors in subsequent generations came and settled in these areas, but this is the first. This is the first experience of the French coming into the area and bringing about an experience of encounter, which is always important when two cultures encounter one another.
So in a way, Father Marquette is kind of the father of the Peoria area.
Absolutely. He's considered one of the fathers of the area from the faith perspective, but I would expand that to say it goes beyond faith because it was also an encounter of European culture coming into the area.
Now, you've mentioned that you've worn this yourself during your ceremony. Talk about what it meant to you to have such a historic vestment on you. What were you thinking, thoughts, feelings?
Well, the amazing thing is that I understand our faith has been handed on. We call the church one holy Catholic apostolic church. It's built on the faith of the apostles who first encountered Jesus. And so from generation to generation, we hand on, and so we carry on that responsibility. And yet that's also even very particular to a specific area. So to know that I got to wear a stole from one of the first missionaries who first brought the faith to this area, now as a successor of the apostle as well, to wear that stole and to have that understanding of both the universality of the church as well as the local reality of the church being combined into one moment.
And I take it it's an honor you didn't take lightly.
Absolutely not. I literally, when I first put the stole on to give that first homily in the diocese, I said I felt the weight of history, but I also felt the weight of what my responsibility is, and it really took me a moment, more than I expected, honestly, to kind of grasp that understanding and reality.
What would you say those responsibilities are?
Well, the responsibilities, obviously, first and foremost, is to preach the faith of Jesus Christ and to bring that message of God's love into the world. That has, over time, evolved into many different responsibilities, but my goal and my responsibility and primary responsibility is to be an evangelist of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And then you also mentioned how you wanted to live up to what Father Marquette taught, some of his values.
Absolutely. You know, Father Marquette was willing to put himself out there and to take risks in order so that he could bring that message to people he had not yet met. You know, he encountered the Indians here. And so I have to do the same. We all have to do the same. We have to be willing to take risks for the faith that we share and the beliefs that we share to bring an encounter to others.
This is a vestment that hasn't seen many public eyes. So when someone comes to the museum to see it, what should they think of? What should they take away from it? How should they view it in a way?
Well, they should understand, again, what the story of Father Marquette was, which is that he was willing to go and take a risk and take a journey to explore and to encounter people that were different from him, and yet to love them and to share a bit of his life and his faith with them and to learn about them and their faith and their life and to bring people together. And so it's a symbol that the people today can recognize that we still have a lot of work to do to try and bring people together and understand one another and learn from one another.
This is an object that has to be very in a controlled environment. It has to be looked after very carefully. So we don't take it lightly that we are able to exhibit this. The lighting has to be precise. The environments have to be right. And we're probably the only place in town that is set up to exhibit this object. So we like to say that objects tell stories. It's the stories people want to connect to. It's the story of the Joliet Marquette expedition, which 350 years ago led them to become the first Europeans on the Illinois River and stopping in our region here. So that's a story that talks to us, but also talks to the rest of the country and the world as Father Marquette becomes the first missionary in the Midwest.
And this vestment played a role in that story.
Absolutely. We don't know if it was when it was worn, if it was worn here. There are things that we just don't know. 350-year history is a lot to account for. But knowing that this has a lineage connection to Father Marquette is the symbol that the museum needs to tell the story that most of us in Peoria probably aren't aware of.
And from what I understood from the ceremony, part of that story and part of that connection is the founding of the Peoria area itself.
It's the beginning. Now, the Peoria area existed for 10,000 years inhabited here. But in terms of European settlement, this is ground zero. This is where it all begins.
How does that story play out? What do you want people to see or take away when they come see the vestments?
Ultimately, this is about Father Marquette's mission, which was to communicate the gospel to people who didn't know. That was what he was dedicated to. He spent his entire life working on that. He definitely signed on for this mission, but he probably cared less about finding a passage to the Pacific Ocean than he cared about communicating Jesus Christ to people who had never heard of this. So he was so taken, so in love with the people that were here, that he set about to come back immediately after his first visit, and unfortunately ended up contracting dysentery and dying before he reached our community here again.
What is Father Marquette's legacy in the Peoria area?
It's the Diocese of Peoria. It is the mission that the Catholic Church is continually working for and has worked for ever since their presence here to preach salvation and to help those who are in need of help.
Now, this is something that just hasn't seen many public eyes. So when people come to the museum, what should they expect? What should they take away from it all?
Sure. It's a very simple display. We are showing you the stole is presented in our lobby area. So it's front and center. We give you a very brief explanation of the importance of the stole and the expedition itself. And a little bit on the background of Père Marquette as well. And so documents like this, events like the dedication today, we will use and disseminate that through social media and through emails and all sorts of different ways of communicating this story.
And from what I understand, too, it's not going to be around for long.
We will leave it up until the end of January. So even though 2023 is going to end and the 350th will click over to 351, we're going to leave it up for another month.
Peoria Catholic Diocese Bishop Louis Tilka and the Peoria Riverfront Museum's Bill Conger. More Week in Review coming up. Some ways local veterans are being supported now. WMBD's Craig Collins talks about that.
First, I got Dave Johnson, who's got an awesome radio voice himself. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good.
Good.
Pretty good.
Good to see you. You are at the VFW in Peoria Heights, among
yes.
a bunch of other stuff you do. You're a veteran. What branch of the military are you serving?
I served in the Navy. I went right out of high school. I went to Manual. And 40 days after I graduated, I was in the Navy.
Wow. How many years did you serve?
3 years, caught the end of Vietnam, wow. So it kind of dates me a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
I've had an interesting life, you might say. I think so.
Yeah, no, we can talk about a bunch of that stuff at some point now that you're hanging out here. It's funny, though, you told me right around when I met you that one of the people I needed to bring in studio was Debbie from the Fuller Center. And so here you are, Debbie. Debbie Gott is with us. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
Can you tell me, first and foremost, before we get into the details, what the Fuller Center is, what the mission is, any of that stuff?
Right. We are part of an international organization, and we locally focus on veterans and widows, home repairs with a focus on safety and security in their home.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in existence for 10 years, and we do yard cleanups, furnace checks. Roof heating comes out and checks the furnace to make sure it's operational for the veteran for the winter.
Yeah.
Right now we're working on a project where this gentleman, a lot of people are so proud not to ask for help, and
yes.
we have this one gentleman who he needed his front door and his back door fixed. So we went out there, and we're all volunteers, and the head volunteer needed some water. So he asked him if he could use his sink in the kitchen, and he said it doesn't work. So this man is sitting in his house
wow.
and doesn't have any running water in his kitchen, and that's one of many. I mean, we had a guy who hadn't had running water for 10 years, and he volunteers at his church every week, but they're too proud to ask for help.
Yeah. No, I'll ask you a little bit more about your experience with that, but I wanted to touch on something you said a second ago. You said, and widows, and spouses.
Right.
How important is it to provide support to the family members of veterans, you know, in kind of that unique sort of a way? Because that is something you don't see as much as far as veteran organizations go. And I every time I talk to an actual vet, they say how they believe that whoever their family members are should be as taken care of as they are for the rest of their lives. So why is it such a unique part of your organization to focus on providing that assistance to families as well?
Because a lot of the widows don't have anyone to call out, and
sure.
with so many scams and things going on, they're afraid to call people. So at least we can go out, and we go out and do a home visit, fill out an application, and then see what we can do. As I said, we're all volunteers, so we go to the home. We get a lot of widows that need yard cleanups.
Mm-hmm.
We went and cleaned a house for a gentleman one day. We have a lady, a widow, that can't hang curtains and things like that. So
wow.
those are very small things we do. You know, we do bigger things, which that's our main focus.
Sure.
But we also want to help people.
So when you're talking about people who and this is true, and I got two veterans in studio. I also have Eric Thurman from the VFW in Peoria Heights sitting here as well. Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Hey, great, Craig. How are you?
We've talked about this a lot, and it's something that I actually really admire about veterans. I definitely don't think it's a negative. However, you got to find a way around it sometimes because people need help. But that desire to not ask for help, that desire to think that there's somebody else who can probably use the Fuller right. Center more, or you know, I don't really want people to get this inside look into whatever it is that they might need help with. What are some of the things you see as far as maybe an end result of a project you do where someone seemed to think, I didn't need your help, but then when it's all over, they are probably inherently grateful that the experience happened?
Right. We've had people that needed their yard done, that facing code violations, things like that. We have one gentleman who the bathroom was absolutely unlivable, and it was just, and to go in there and redo the whole bathroom, new tub and everything, I mean, it really wasn't available to live in, actually, because it was in that bad a shape. Wow. And then to see the picture, the before and the after, is truly, and just to go and do the yards, I mean, people come out and they start crying,
sure.
which isn't, you know, something that we're wanting to do.
Yeah, no, you're right.
They're so thankful,
right.
and because people say they can't find people to help them. And our problem is, you know, it's great to come on here and get the word out because, you know, we've went to VFWs, American Legions, we have a billboard, we, you know, take every opportunity we can to sure. get the word out about our organization.
Do you guys have a big amount of, like, demand, like a long waiting list of people who
no,
are
No, we
looking
don't
help?
Have a waiting list right now. We've okay. got about 5 projects going on.
Okay. In need of volunteers, though, I imagine.
Right. We do need volunteers. We can use people who can do construction. We can use people because we don't build houses. We yeah. go in and fix the
them.
Houses up so people can live. We had one gentleman in the near north side. He tried to go out in his wheelchair and sit on his front porch, and he was going to fall through.
Wow.
We went to a house over in Creve Coeur. We got on the front porch to rebuild his porch, and one of our volunteers, his foot fell through because it was that bad a shape.
Wow.
We had a gentleman who was so large that he couldn't get out of his bedroom because of his wheelchair, so a construction company teamed up with us and took out 2 holes in his house so he could come out
yeah.
to be able to go to the doctor and things.
Let me ask it this way to our veterans, Dave and Eric. I'm guessing. I don't know. But I'm wondering if, because of what you're asked to do when you serve in our military, because of the responsibility that I think veterans uniquely take compared to most people today about their lives, about, like, it's a unique thing. Because if you ask a veteran, oh, man, I think that's a mistake, or that, like, they'll own things they get wrong. Like, there's just, it's a different way to communicate than the way that I talk to most of people in my generation or younger. Is it because of that, that maybe you don't want people to see some of the areas of a life that might have gotten out of control, like maybe through no fault of your own? But is that one of the big reasons that people wouldn't be turning to the Fuller Center and asking for help themselves?
I think you find this typical of veterans, that especially in the last, it's ever since we got rid of the draft.
Yeah,
you know, we all volunteered to go in. It was our choice. And when I have people come up and say, you know, thank you for your service, I appreciate it. I really do.
Sure.
But at the same time, it also shocks me because I want to tell them that, well, I volunteered for it. You know, it was
yeah.
my privilege to serve you
right.
as a citizen of this country.
Yes.
And I think that is typical. They don't want to help. They don't want to admit that they need help.
Sure.
And that is particularly problematic with the amount of suicide rate.
Right.
I wish there'd be more people that understand PTSD more, especially even the veterans themselves. I have a that part of me, but it I didn't know it was a problem with me until I got more educated.
Sure.
So that is.
Can I ask, I apologize, and thank you. You just opened up a lot on the show, Dave, and I want to ask a follow-up question to what you just said there. What did you think was going on before you understood that maybe there was some PTSD stuff? Did you just say, oh, I'm just being overly negative, or did you in some way blame yourself for any of that?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, in my situation, I never got injured. I never had a Purple Heart, you know, and with me, it's things that was bothering me. You know, it's like, you know, hey, you know, suck it up. There's a lot more people that ended up a lot worse than what you did.
Wow.
So that was one of the reasons that I wouldn't even talk about the situation I was in for the longest time, because I didn't want to make that big of a deal about it, mm-hmm. because to me it was not as important as someone getting their arm blown off or something like that.
And this has created your advocacy, your support for the Fuller Center now, is understanding the amount of people that are in need?
Yes. I met Debbie through a veteran that I know that he needed a couple things. Help with his house. He developed post polio syndrome.
Wow.
And he was very hard getting around, and he also needed a vehicle.
Yeah.
So I got with Debbie, and we also teamed up with Don Yarbrough. Don and set him up with a vehicle.
Wow.
And that's not the only time he's done things like that.
Cool.
But then I was talking to Debbie about what she needs was they don't have the wherewithal to get a lot of volunteers, not only volunteers, but especially monies.
Yeah.
So at our VFW, as you know, we give to Freedom Paws every month.
Yeah.
We give to Don's Veterans Helping Veterans every month.
Yep.
We've also taken on Fuller Center for donations every month.
More Week in Review coming up. We had to bid a coworker farewell on Friday who had been with us for decades, but before he walked out the door one last time, he talked with WMBD's Greg Batten and Dan DiOrio.
Dan and I have been doing this a long time, but not as long as this guy, Randy Rundle, of our sister station, Mix 106.9, and it's been various things throughout the years as far as names. The frequency has not changed. But Randy is retiring after decades in the broadcast business. Good to see you, buddy.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Hey, Dan.
How are you feeling about all this?
I was calling him short timer and asking him how many hours. He goes, "You're freaking me out about this."
Usually I only get called short man, but short timer is a new one. But I tell you guys, the word that keeps coming to the top is weird.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, it's weird.
We're all of the same age-ish where we know people who have retired, and I'm always curious. I ask people, I was like, how is it feel? It's almost, and I usually ask guys. I don't ask ladies too much, but the guys all say something similar, surreal-like.
Yeah, right? I'm really having a hard time wrapping my brain around the whole thing because, as you said, it's been decades, actually over half a century when you really think about that.
Oh my God,
Elizabeth, I'm coming for you.
And you're not like 100 years old, so it's an enormous percentage of your life has been in this business. So it's 52 years, right?
That's correct.
Well, you know what's weird is like they say, well, for happiness, you shouldn't totally identify with your job.
Right.
But I totally identify with my job. That's who I am, and you've been around it. It's like,
yeah, what else?
Yeah,
that's what who we are, right?
You know, ask my wife and my family about that. They'll be the first ones to chime in. It's just like, you know, it's the old joke that I walked in the house one night, wife called the police, said there's a stranger in my house, you know, that kind of thing, you know. But it you're right. But in order to do the job, this job especially, you guys know, you have to immerse yourself in this thing.
Yeah, it's all the time.
You know, you just can't punch a time clock and, okay, I'm in it at 8 and then I'm out at 4:30, man. Right. And then I go home and I forget all about it. That just
No, you're thinking about it all the time.
Oh, you're at the store and you're like, oh, that's going to be on the show tomorrow.
That's right.
Not to get too inside radio here, but you, for as long as I've known you, besides being a terrific personality and having to worry about the show that you do every morning for these years, but you also have been the guy responsible for all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, we were just joking before we started recording. Microphones in this room that we're in, helping us with the technical things. So you have that brain.
Well, and if people may not know this, but when we can't figure anything out, someone goes,
We call Randy. And so I'm a little nervous myself, you leaving, to be honest with you.
That's a lot of knowledge.
I want to go back to when you started. So you were pretty young, right?
I was, actually. I was had just turned 15 years old, actually.
And where was this?
That was in Peru, La Salle, Peru, okay. Which is where I'm from.
Okay.
And the weird part about it was I just fell into the job. One of my duties as being student council vice president of my high school class at La Salle Peru High School, part of my responsibilities was a homecoming parade.
Okay.
And I had to find local celebrities, quote unquote, to judge the homecoming parade.
Okay.
So I called one of the guys from the local radio stations over there, and I said, hey, I'm you know, Joe Schmo, and I'm looking for somebody. Hey, what do you think, and would you help us? And he said, yes, I will help you. And by the way, do you want a job? And I am not making that up.
I have known you for many years. This is the first time I've heard this.
He says, and by the, on the phone.
Did you have the voice already?
I guess I did. I was not aware of that, you know, because it was my voice.
And that happened to me in high school, too. Somebody else said something to me in high school.
But. Yeah, and he says, and by the way, do you want a job? And I said, when I picked the phone back up off the floor, I said, excuse me, sir. You know.
And did you start shortly after that?
The next day.
Oh, my goodness.
The next day, I was in the radio station. I'd never been in a radio station before in my life. The next day, I was in there.
I like to brag that I've never had to fill out a resume, mm-hmm. and my only job interview was when I came here 36 years ago, sitting at Lou's.
Right.
But people just go, hey, why don't you come do this? How much? Are you that way? Are you like, have never really officially applied for a job?
The only time I applied for a job is when I applied for this one at this radio station, and that was in 1984. Mm-hmm. That was the only time that I've ever really had to make an application or a resume or anything like that.
And that was 106.9 when it was up on Grossenbach Road and all that.
When they call it the Sweet 107.
Sure, I remember that. Sure,
you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And a guy by the name of John Krogstad, who was the general manager at the time of the radio station. In those days, each station had its own manager.
Okay.
And came down, took a look at the thing, you know, sent him a tape, you know, the whole thing like that. Cassettes, by the way, you know, cassettes.
Right?
And so he said it went well, and so I get a letter in the mail. I get a call, and then I get a letter in the mail, and here you go, and we'd like you to join us. And that was in November of 1984.
And you've been on that frequency ever since?
Yes.
Yeah. And
except
and
for
so,
3 years. I was off for 3 years.
Yeah,
I was,
so it's like you never thought about the career. You fell into the career.
Yes.
Yeah.
So interesting. I was going to be, go to the University of Illinois and study law. Because my parents said, you know, you really, you're just messing with this stuff, okay? You cannot possibly make a living out of this.
Yeah.
How can you possibly get paid for doing what you do? My dad could never understand that.
I guess I know all those people you're partners with, but I thought there was others I didn't know. Yeah.
Well, Stephanie Aaron was the first one, and then Stacey Campbell.
Right.
And then Stephanie Blue.
Yeah.
And then Shelley Dagnoff.
And then Shelley
Dagnoff. So, I've had four. And they're all S's, by the way.
I was going to say, you have a thing without one.
Yes. Yeah. You have to have a first name that starts with S.
I'll tell you who's real disappointed today that he's retiring is Shirley Jones. She was coming in with the S name. She was coming in, and she was going to be Randy's partner. We're talking to Randy Rundle. Randy is retiring from 106.9. I know you're not going to just go away. I mean, I hope you don't. And I hate this cliche question, but people want to know, do you have specific things to do? Are you going to try something else? Are you going to stay dabbling in voiceover and those kind of things? So you do a lot of that.
I do a lot of that, and I'd like to. I'd like to expand that, although AI may have something else to say about eventually. But I think that I would like to expand my voiceover business, and I do that. And, you know, I do a lot of the brought to you buys and all this other kind of stuff on all over the place. And, I do commercials and what have you. But I think I have a couple of other kind of irons in the fire that I'm thinking about also taking advantage of. And it's kind of funny, you know, you never hear from people, and then people get wind that, you know, that there's a change, and then the phone starts ringing.
Randy Rundle with WMBD's Greg and Dan. We'll miss you, Randy. Thanks for everything. That does it for this edition of Week in Review. Happy New Year. I'm Will Stevenson, WMBD Radio News.